Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, how's everyone doing this evening? Thank you so much for joining us on Occult Science Radio this evening. I am Curtis Davis, a.k.a. the Illuminated One. Well, tonight we have back with us an old family member who's been here from the beginning, and he's the Illuminated One. And something's been happening with Brother Mark lately that has totally warmed my heart. People are recognizing his great work, you know, and his popularity is starting to rise. And when I see that, it lets me know that, okay, yeah, there is hope out here, okay? Because if you've been paying attention to Mark Passio's work, there's no way you're going to listen to that information and not come away being at least many times wiser. So I can't wait, because tonight we have a good one. I'm going to start off by thanking TUN, the Occult Network, and you can find the Occult Network at www.theoccultnetwork.com. You can also find the Occult Network on Facebook. We have a Facebook page over there. You can find us on YouTube and Twitter as well. And also catch up with me on Facebook. I have two pages now. The first page is almost near capacity, and I had to start a second one. So you can find me on Facebook, Curtis Illuminated One Davis. And so come by, become a friend of mine on either page, join us at the Occult Network on Facebook, on YouTube, and Twitter as well, and then you're going to be totally in tune to what's going on with Occult Science Radio and the Occult Network. So you're going to want to call in this evening, family, because this is going to be a powerful show. 646-649-1987. That's 646-649-1987. And if you have a question or a comment, don't forget to press number one on your keypad so we can get you on the switchboard and we can take your beautiful questions and comments. And tonight's topic is natural law and the New Age spirituality deception. So this is where I'm going to step back and welcome back our dear friend and brother, Mark Passio.
Curtis, my friend, thank you so much for having me back on your great show.
Oh, yes. Well, this is home to you. You know that, Mark. Believe me. I mean, you've done some of your best work on this show, you know, because every time you come here, you know, it, like, resonates, you know. So, I mean, you've been doing some conferences recently. You did a great conference in Connecticut.
Yes.
That, you know, that's on YouTube right now. And believe me, family, listeners, if you have not seen those three videos, go to YouTube, you know, ASAP, and just look up Mark Passio and Natural Law and sit back and watch those three videos. So that's why I'm so excited about tonight. You know, Natural Law and the New Age Spirituality Deception, because once again, we've been hoodwinked, or at least they tried to. You know, first they tried it with church, you know, and the mosque, but now they also tried it with New Age Spirituality. So now, family, I'm going to let Mark tell the rest.
Yeah, thank you so much for that great introduction, Curtis, and people should definitely go and check out the work that I've done on Natural Law up in Connecticut. That was hosted by Arthur Capozzi and his brother Chris Capozzi, and it was filmed by Richard Grove and Lisa and the whole crew from Tragedy and Hope Communications. And everybody involved did a great job in hosting that and filming it and getting it up there on YouTube so that people can see what we did up there in Connecticut, just outside of Yale University. It was an all-day seminar on natural law, what I call the real law of attraction and how to apply it in your life. It's about 8.5 hours worth of videos total, and for people who are willing to invest the spiritual currencies of a little bit of time and a little bit of attention in their lives, I think they'll come away from that presentation series with some spiritual gold in their one eye, if you will. So let's talk about natural law, and let's talk about the New Age deception. You know, the New Age deception, it goes hand in hand with the lack of understanding of natural law principles. That's what it's put there to do. It's put there, this religion of standing down, of not getting involved, of not taking action, of what I call feel-good spirituality, not streetwise spirituality, as I kind of like to coin that term regarding what I do. I'm just some guy from South Philadelphia, Curtis, you know, who has stumbled upon the mystery traditions, who has stumbled upon this little tiny thing called truth and is trying to communicate it. That's all. You know, I don't look at myself as anyone important. It's the message that is important. Don't pay attention to me. Pay attention to the message. Pay attention to the information that is capable of transformation, of transforming you. You know, so what the New Age deception is all about is preventing that lack, preventing that true understanding, creating a lack of understanding of true streetwise spirituality, as I like to coin the term. That's what I do. You know, I try to bring forward streetwise spirituality, you know, understanding what's really going on from a mature perspective, not a naive one. Okay, and the New Age deception is there, again, to prevent that deep unfoldment of that understanding. And really what it's been put there, this religion, this catch-all religion, as I like to call it, see, it catches all the people who don't fall into the category of standard organized worldwide cultural religions, or as you so eloquently put it, organized distorted doctrine. Okay, all the people who don't buy into that mass, worldwide, organized, distorted doctrine, this religion called the New Age movement is a catch-all for all of those people that don't fall into that. So if they're interested in spirituality and trying to get to the core of what real spirituality is about, this is the other catch-all religion that is it's put there to dissuade them from their true course of awakening. And I'll get into what that really is in a few moments. You know, people talk about enlightenment and awakening, and they don't really many of them at least don't really understand what that really truly means. They have a distorted and a very, I would say, either very naive look at what that really is, that process of true spiritual awakening, or they have a ridiculously overcomplicated and almost impossible notion of what that is, okay? And we can look at those aspects in a little while and talk about what it really means to be awake, what it really truly means to be enlightened. But to go back to the New Age movement as a religion, the purpose of it is to, it's again, twofold. It is to stop people from truly taking action in their lives. It stresses thoughts and emotions, but it often and frequently leaves out the action or the sacred masculine component of consciousness. And that's actually taking real-world action to make actual, real, positive change happen right here and now, on Earth, now. Not somewhere else in some other dimension of being, in some other energetic system somewhere else, on some other planet or star system, not in some past time or some future time. It means taking real world action here on Earth and now at this very moment, the present moment of time. Okay? And the New Age movement is put there to take people off of that course of creating and willing through their behavior, through action, to create real positive change in the here and now on Earth. That's, see, they want to constantly stress these ideas of, well, this isn't about this world. This is about some spiritual domain, or it's only about the internal world, you know, the spiritual and psychological world of the individual. No, that's where the work starts. That's where it begins. It has to begin there, because everything that exists around us is a product of our consciousness. We are co-creators with the different aspects of consciousness. And we are creating the reality that we experience as a result of our thoughts, emotions, and actions. And actions, most importantly of all. That's the number one thing that creates actual change in our environment, in our situation, in our experience. So this religion, the New Age movement, and it is a religion, the defining hallmarks of a religion is it is based upon dogmatic beliefs that ultimately hold us back from where we want, say that we want to be. See, that's what an actual false religion is. And this comes from the root word religion. It comes from the Latin verb relegare. Relegare means to hold back or to thwart from forward progress by tying up and holding in place. To bind in place is what relegare really means, which is where the word religion comes from. And that's what I would call a very good definition, etymologically derived, of what religion does, what religion actually is. I would qualify that and say what a false religion is and does. See, there's this positive connotation to the word religion from the verb relegare. It can also mean to reunite by tying something back to something else, where it fell from or where it broke off from. You're binding it back to the original source, to the source. You're tying it back to the source. Okay, so that really could be a very positive connotation of what religion means, in a sense that it's not tying up to hold back, that it's reuniting with the original essence of something. And that's what a true religion does. And I would contend that there's really only one true religion, and that is truth itself. Truth is the only thing that we should be striving in our personal lives to make our religion. Most people try to make their religion the truth, but when in fact what we need to do is the exact opposite process. We need to try to make truth our religion. We need to make truth the thing that we bind ourselves back to, that we tie ourselves to, okay, that we hold fast to. Instead of binding ourselves to a rigid and dogmatic belief system that is not based in truth, that does not allow us to go where we say we want to go because it's holding us back in consciousness. So that now we have a kind of an idea of what I'm really talking about when I say the word religion. When I refer to the New Age religion, I'm talking about it as a false religion that holds us back from where we say we want to go as a species. And how it does that, how it accomplishes that process of binding is, it prevents the adherents of this religion from a high level and accurate understanding of natural law. And what I would also say it prevents them from a high level and accurate understanding of is the occult in general, occult knowledge, which again, I really don't should not have to remind your listeners of what that is. I could just go into a brief breakdown of the two bodies of knowledge that comprise what the occult is. The occult is two large overarching bodies of knowledge. The first is the knowledge of how the human psyche works, okay, how the actual components of consciousness within the individual, the monad or the individuated unit of consciousness works, okay? That's what you would call in the occult knowledge the lesser arcana or the minor arcana, not meaning that it is, you know, of less significance or importance, meaning that it deals with the small, it deals with the microcosmic elements of consciousness, the individuated units of consciousness, or what have been called in the occult world the monads of consciousness, the small or one singular aspects of consciousness. And then you have the macrocosmic domain of knowledge, the knowledge of how the laws of nature work, the knowledge of universal laws, cosmic laws that operate at all times and places, no matter where we're at in the universe or no matter at what time we are present, okay? These laws are eternal. These laws are omnipresent, okay? And they are not put into effect by anyone in the three-dimensional space-time continuum. They are put into effect by that which brought the universe forth into being, whatever you want to refer to that force as. Many people will call it God, the creator of the universe, the creative force, the underlying pure intelligence that basically underlies all of nature. I don't really care what people refer to that force or energy or being as. Whatever you want to call it is up to you. It's not up to me to tell people what their relationship needs to be with that force. That's up to them to forge an individual relationship with that force or that intelligence or that being, however they want to look at it, okay? But that's where the laws of nature came from. That's what put them into effect, okay, that primal source. And that's the second body of knowledge that comprises occult knowledge and occult wisdom. It's the understanding of how those forces of nature are actually operating and how we are bound by those laws eternally, no matter what we do where we go or whether we even understand them or not. Okay, so what I do in my work is try to explain to people how those two bodies of knowledge work with each other and, you know, delve into each one of those bodies of knowledge to help people to gain a little bit more understanding about how we are co-creating our reality in conjunction with that knowledge or in lack of that knowledge, how we are creating unconsciously, largely what humanity is doing as a species right now, why we're in the situation of slavery that we are in right now, is because we are not co-creating wisely and in full knowledge and understanding of those two aspects of occult knowledge, both the lesser arcana, which is the knowledge of the human psyche, and the greater arcana, which is the knowledge of the laws of nature. We're not in proper understanding of how those laws work, and hence we're creating unwisely, and we're getting results that are chaotic and disorderly, and that lead to further forms of enslavement and bondage. And the only way we can really turn that process around is through that knowledge of that occult information that has been hidden from us in the past, bringing that forward in an open way and coming to an accurate understanding of how those two bodies of knowledge work, and then putting them into wise practice in our world through our behavior, through our actions, the masculine component of consciousness. And when we do that, then we're going to see different effects result. We're going to see order and freedom and peace and harmony and all the other things we say we want as a species develop and manifest in our world. So that's what I try to do with my work. And what I explain to people is that the New Age movement, instead of actually working with that knowledge and bringing it forward in an open capacity, that knowledge is actually being suppressed through what the New Age movement is doing. Okay, they are taking that knowledge and keeping it down by sugarcoating it with false feel-good spiritual notions and subtle deceptions that are what people want to hear instead of what the truth actually is regarding those spiritual dimensions and forces, okay? They're giving people a simulacra or a simulation of the real thing. And what they're doing is they're dressing it with candy, okay? And they're saying, here's the sugar pill that's the placebo or the simulacra of the real thing. And you can take this and you can imagine that you're going to be enlightened. You won't really be enlightened by taking this, okay, this fake feel-good spirituality. You're going to believe that you are, okay? We're going to give you this in place of the real thing. And so in doing that, it acts as a religion by holding us back from where we need to really go and what we really need to understand. And if you'd like, I could go into a breakdown of some of the subtle deceptions that this movement puts forward, and we could break some of them down individually if you'd like.
Oh, yes, please. Go
sure.
for it, Mark.
Now, and again, please stop me when you're ready to take any questions or whenever you have any questions or whenever you want to go to any phone calls. If anybody chimes in, again, we wanted to leave some time for calls today too. So at any time you need to stop me, Curtis, please do, because you know I could go on and on if I'm left to my own devices. So,
I love it. That's why I brought you here.
Okay. All right. So there's many different subtle deceptions that operate through the New Age movement to prevent people from understanding natural law. Now, before we even get into these, let's just very briefly break down natural law, because I've gone into natural law extensively on past shows, and what we really kind of want to focus on is the New Age deceptions on this show. So very briefly, I'll talk about natural law from what I would call the trivium perspective of natural law. That's what the knowledge of natural law is. Now most people will look at the trivium in three respects. I kind of almost tack on like a fourth thing, which is the manifestation that results in how we've used the trivium or not used it. Okay, so you have knowledge at the bottom level of the trivium, that's the base. Then we have understanding of that knowledge, and that's the processing stage. And then we have the output, which is our behavior, which would be called wisdom in the ancient trivium methodology of truth discovery. So the three steps are knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. And we can look at natural law very briefly from a perspective of the trivium, from a perspective of what is the knowledge of natural law, or in other words, what is it? What does it mean to understand natural law, to hold an understanding of it? And then if we do hold an understanding of natural law, how would behavior be? How would behavior change? Or in other words, what is the wisdom aspect of natural law, the masculine aspect of putting it into practice in the world? And then my fourth aspect of explaining natural law is what happens as a result? What is the manifested reality that takes place as a result of the knowledge, understanding, and wisdom of natural law? Okay, so let's look at this from this fourfold perspective. What is natural law? Natural law is a very brief working definition of natural law. It is the body of cosmic, universal, spiritual, non-man-made, binding, and immutable conditions or laws, okay, which act as the governing dynamics for the consequences of the behavior of intelligent beings. Now that's a mouthful, okay? But let me just repeat that one more time. Natural law is the body of cosmic, universal, spiritual, non-man-made, I would say non-any three-dimensional being made, binding and immutable conditions or laws which act as the governing dynamics for the consequences of the behavior of intelligent beings. Okay? So the behavior that beings put forward who are capable of even beginning to grasp these cosmic laws, okay, our behaviors go out, that what we do have a ripple effect. Okay, and then we experience the consequences that natural law is actually reorganizing and reshaping the reality that we live in and bringing to us the inevitable, absolutely undeniable and inescapable consequences that we are creating through the behaviors that we choose from our own free will. And our free will interoperates with natural law. It is a feedback loop, you could say. It's a never-ending interconnected dynamic interplay between free will and natural law. Free will being the random component of the universe, that which we are free to choose, that which we will do. But there is a deterministic and bound component to the universe that is called natural law or cosmic universal spiritual law. I don't care what you call it. It's the same thing. It directs and governs the consequences of behavior based upon what we've chosen to do with our free will, how we put our free will into action and manifestation in the world. That interacts and interoperates with the deterministic component of the creation called natural law, and we get the result that we experience through the interaction between those two dynamics. Free will being the random dynamic, the random component, okay, and natural law being the deterministic component of creation. So that's what natural law is in a nutshell. Now, what does it mean to hold an understanding of natural law? Okay, understanding natural law means that a being has truly developed conscience. Natural law is all about the laws of morality, the laws about the objective difference between right behavior and wrong behavior, between right action and wrong action. And those differences are not man-made. They are not chosen by whim. They are not chosen by preference. They are not subjective. They are not based on our perceptions. They are objective and definitive. Okay, they are black and white. People will say, oh, that's such a black and white view. Isn't it all about shades of gray? No, it is not. The laws of nature are black and white and absolute. And this is humanity's greatest fear. This is why we're enslaved as a species, because we do not understand the absolute nature of moral law, of cosmic spiritual law. It is not relative. It is 100% black and white. Relativism plays no role in it whatsoever. As a matter of fact, moral relativism is what creates human enslavement by buying into that ideology. There is an objective, definitive difference between right behavior and wrong behavior, and it is human beings' quest in the spirit to fully come to an understanding of what that difference is and then actually live it, choose it willfully in every moment of their lives, to choose willfully, once they have that knowledge, to choose the right action over the wrong action in every given moment in their life, okay, such to bring about non-contradiction between our knowledge and our behavior, okay? So what does it mean to understand natural law? This is the second question, the second part of the four parts that we're going to explore here about natural law. Understanding natural law means truly having developed conscience. Conscience is knowledge. This is another thing people, kind of almost balk at hearing. Conscience is knowledge? Well, isn't it action? Isn't it behavior? No. The exercise of conscience is behavior. Knowledge, a conscience, is actually knowledge. In the word, we can see from an etymological derivation of the word conscience that it means knowledge. It means common sense knowledge, common knowledge. Con in Latin is a prefix that means with or together. And the second part of the word conscience is science. This comes from the Latin verb sciere. Sciere in Latin means to know or to understand. So again, this is the understanding component of natural law. So truly having conscience means to come together in the understanding of morality. That's what conscience actually is. It's the knowledge, the definitive knowledge of the objective difference between morally right behavior and morally wrong behavior. And that is what it means. To have conscience is what it truly means to understand natural law. Now, I don't mean what most people think about as having conscience. I mean having real conscience, capital C, or capitalize all of the letters in conscience to distinguish it from the colloquially used definition or connotation of conscience. When most people say, oh, does he have a conscience? That's not what I'm talking about here. Is he generally a good person or somewhat moral person? I'm talking about actually definitively knowing the objective difference between right behavior and wrong behavior, meaning knowing what a right is definitively and knowing what a wrong is definitively. And again, we've covered this extensively on other shows, so I won't belabor the point. But that's what it really means to understand natural law, truly having conscience, which is the definitive knowledge of the objective difference between morally right behavior and morally wrong behavior. Now, let's look at the wisdom stage of natural law, or what does it mean to put this into practice, okay? So what does living in harmony with the laws of nature really mean, living in harmony with natural law? And again, this term is often hijacked, the word natural. It does not mean this conceptualized notion that most people who have a very poisoned or diseased worldview look at as the quote-unquote natural order. Okay, this term natural order is so completely misunderstood by most people, and they look at it in a Darwinian perspective. Okay, so what I call the Darwinian quote-unquote natural order that most people hold in their mind, okay, as being the natural way things are, meaning like that animals who are the most vicious and ruthless should, you know, get to rule the roost because, you know, they've fought their way to that position and therefore their genes will propagate, and that's just the natural order. That's not the natural order. What I call that is the artificial chaos, the artificially imposed chaotic conditions that we're living in. Okay, that has nothing to do with the laws of nature whatsoever. Absolutely zero, less than zero. Okay, and people have to wipe that idea out of their mind about that the Darwinian ideology has anything to do with the natural order or with quote-unquote natural law, that this banner term that I group the laws of conscience, morality, and the cosmic spiritual laws of the universe under this banner term that I term and many other researchers term natural law. Natural law is what brings about true order. It is the true spiritual order because right is in its place as the highest force in the universe. Truth is in its place as the highest force in the universe, okay? True morality, righteousness, and the knowledge of truth, okay? That's what brings order, okay? So the natural order is living truly in harmony with natural law, which humanity is so far away from that it can barely even be described how far off this species is from even an understanding of natural law, let alone living in harmony with it. Okay, we have a long way to go to get to that point. So what does it actually mean to live in harmony with natural law? This means exercising conscience. Now, here's where the behavior comes in. Conscience is knowledge, an understanding of the difference between right and wrong behavior. Then when we actually apply it in the world, that's taking action based upon our knowledge and our understanding. So living in harmony with natural law means we are exercising conscience rightly, in the right way. Okay, so we're choosing wisely in our behavior, and we are willfully choosing morally right behavior over morally wrong behavior. Once we have taken that difference deeply into ourselves and it is clearly understood within our own psyche, within our own mind. So we take in the knowledge of the definitive difference between the objective, definitive difference between right and wrong behavior, and then we exercise our conscience. We act upon that knowledge, that common sense knowledge, to willfully choose morally right behavior over morally wrong behavior. Okay, that's what it means to act upon natural law, to live in harmony with it. Okay, now, what is the generated manifestation or the result that we create? And again, this is why natural law is the real law of attraction. This is how the result is attracted to us. This is how we co-create and co-generate the experience that we must live within as a result of what we created. Okay, that's why these are the laws of creation. These are the laws of attraction. It is not this notion of the secret, this watered-down notion of the laws of attraction, which we'll get to in a little bit. Okay, these are the real laws of attraction. This is how we're really co-creating our reality in the aggregate sense as a species. Okay, so what happens if we know what natural law is? If we develop an understanding of how it works, and then if we willfully choose to align our behaviors with it, well, something happens. When human beings live in harmony with natural law, okay, they therefore have become moral beings, beings that truly possess the knowledge of morality, of the difference between right and wrong behavior, okay? When they actually align their behavior to those laws, they become free, and they stay that way. They remain free beings. This is what I call the law of freedom. Freedom is directly proportional with morality. As morality increases, freedom increases. Freedom is directly non-proportional to immorality. Okay? As immorality increases and a blatant disregard for natural law increases, we become more enslaved. We become less free. Okay? So it's that dynamic has to be clearly understood. When human beings live in harmony with the moral laws of nature, okay, they are becoming more moral beings, and therefore they become free and they stay that way. They stay free. When human beings, unfortunately, decide that they're going to live in opposition to the moral laws of nature, in opposition to natural law, and they become more and more immoral, and their behavior reflects that immoral condition, okay, they become enslaved, and they stay enslaved. For as long as their mindset reflects the result or the manifestation of what happens when we understand, when we know what natural law is, when we understand how it works, and when we choose to either live in harmony with it or flagrantly disregard it and live in opposition to it, what happens? Well, in the positive manifestation, freedom results and order results. And in the negative manifestation, when we choose to live in opposition to it, slavery results. That's what happens every time. Chaos and slavery and ultimately death. Okay? So that, in a nutshell, is the goal of spirituality. It is knowing natural law, understanding how it works, and choosing willfully to live in harmony with it at all times and places through an act of our will. Okay? That's what it means to be enlightened. And understanding that means that we know that there's no such thing as authority, because that natural law is all about truly being free and being moral and not coercing other people, not doing coercive behaviors to other individuals. Knowing the rights that we have as free individuated units of consciousness here in this universe, as free beings, and then choosing to live in a non-coercive way with our other fellow beings. That's what natural law is. That's what being enlightened is all about, the non-aggression principle. And that goes hand in hand with the self-defense principle, knowing that if beings are choosing willfully to live in direct opposition to that by choosing to coercively try to control others, that you always have a right to physically defend yourself from that coercive behavior. And that right should never be given away or try to be put in the hands of somebody else and claiming that, oh, that's not my responsibility to protect my rights and to protect, you know, myself and my physical vehicle under natural law. That's somebody else's responsibility to do. This is a cop-out, and this is a complete handing over or an abdication of our own responsibility. With the self-defense principle. So the masculine and feminine principle, the feminine principle being the principle of non-aggression, needs to be combined with the masculine principle of self-defense. These are the pillars of enlightenment, as I call them. And we've discussed this on previous shows. So that is the, in a nutshell, how natural law works, what it is, how it works, and what gets created as a result of living in harmony with it or living in opposition to it. Now, what is the New Age religion? It is this catch-all religion to catch all the people that don't fit into the or buy into the cultural world religions, you know, exoteric religions of Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, etc., okay? For people who haven't bought those ideological religious notions and bought into the notions of, you know, dogma that come out of those traditions, there's this catch-all religion called the New Age movement. And what I like to call it is, many other researchers have coined this term. I don't have names off the top of my head, but other researchers have used this term. They call it the cul-de-sac before the spiritual gold mine, okay? Real spirituality is waiting at the end of the spiritual path. A real understanding of what true awakening and true enlightenment and true spirituality is all about, which is what I've just described, the understanding of natural law and how it works. And then there's this thing that is placed, it's positioned just before you get to that. It's in between. Let's say you could look at it as like a road, and at the beginning is pure ignorance and pure ego and pure denial of, you know, that there is any such thing as spirit or and spiritual laws at all. Then you have religion that's a little bit farther down the path. You know, the cultural religions try to put people on the right path, but they're so bogged down in dogma and exoteric, you know, misunderstandings or literalized interpretations of spirituality. You know, they get so bogged down in the story that the real spirituality barely comes through. You know, it lies at the heart of them, but it barely even pokes through the surface 99% of the time. you know, you go past that organized distorted doctrine, as you like to refer to it as, and I love that term, by the way. You go past that, and you get to the New Age movement. You know, this is postured, it is positioned as real spirituality, but it's not. It's this religion that is still holding people back from getting to the goal at the end of that spiritual path. And what researchers have called it is a cul-de-sac. It's a little circular driveway, you know, and people go, instead of taking the straight path, they go into the side channel on the right-hand side, and that takes them around in a circle. And they keep going around in this circle like a hamster on a wheel. And they never come out of that circle. It's a nice little trap that's positioned just before the gold mine that lies a little further down the path. But these people think, oh, I'm on the path. You know, I'm going and going and going, but they're going around in a circle. This is the allegory or the little, you know, kind of symbol that I like to give people to describe what is the New Age movement, what is it acting as. It's that cul-de-sac that's keeping people from going further down the path of real spirituality, and so they think they're enlightened in that place, and they never really get to the real deal. It's a simulation. It is a forgery. It's a fake version. It's a picture of the real thing that's being handed to somebody as the real thing, but it's not the real thing. Okay, so how are people taken off this path? Let's look at some of the deceptions that are involved. And they're subtle. Many of them are very subtle, okay? It's not like they're just blatantly throwing you a bunch of lies that are transparent. If that were the case, so many people wouldn't have fallen for this religion, okay? So they're subtle deceptions, and they have rationales for the deceptions. We need to understand why these deceptions are so insidious in their subtlety, okay, that how they hold people back from developing true, what I call streetwise spirituality. And before I even get to some of these, one of the main things that absolutely, invariably, I find in common with people who have subscribed to the New Age religion is this. None of them, I would say almost zero. Now, that's not a blanket statement, because there are some here and there, but there are so few and far between that it's almost laughable, okay? Almost all the people who buy into this religion have zero understanding of what occultism really is. They don't understand the occult. They are looking into these things from a perspective of feel-good spirituality, but they don't understand that occult knowledge is a two-edged blade, that there is a positive side to incorporating that knowledge into one's being. And then this tool, which is a body of knowledge, okay, can be used for the opposite purpose other than spiritual enlightenment and uplift of human beings. It can be used as a weapon, and it can be used to keep people in a state of slavery. This is what I've traditionally referred to as the dark occult. Okay, it's a way of using occulted knowledge to hold people in chains, in bondage, in slavery. It's mind control techniques. It's understanding how certain aspects of the human psyche work so you can twist and manipulate people with that knowledge if they already happen to be in ignorance of it. If you're in deep knowledge of how a component of the psyche works and other people are in total ignorance of how that knowledge and how their emotional makeup work, okay, you could do a number on them. And just as a brief example to this dynamic, and this is, again, to speak to the naivete of the New Age community. It is a very naive community. It's a very I want to stop short of using the word childish, but it is childlike in its understanding. It's not streetwise. It's a very naive spiritual approach. And again, I'm just going to say that. I don't care who it offends. If you want to get offended by that, go right ahead and get offended by that. I'm here to speak the truth, not make friends with people. Okay, I'm trying to explain to them how they're subtly being deceived, and they need to really wake up to a new level of understanding and become streetwise about what's going on. Okay, that's the approach that it's going to take to get us out of this slavery that we're in. All right, so let me just give you a very brief example of this. Okay, in the 2008 elections, when Barack Obama was running for president, his team of handlers, and yes, the president does have a team of handlers, okay, came up with a very insidious but brilliant technique using neuro-linguistic programming and playing off of deep understanding of the human psyche and the human motivation to want to elect a leader that is compassionate and knowledgeable. And here's how they did this, okay? And people can look this up online. You can go to YouTube, and you can understand. Whenever people ask me who really have no understanding of what the occult is, or specifically what the dark occult is, I always try to give them this example as a starting point to understand mind control manipulation techniques through dark occult knowledge. Okay? If you go to YouTube and you type in Obama's fainting women or Obama's fainting ladies or just Obama and fainting on the campaign trail or, you know, Obama fainting campaign, okay? If you type in something similar to those, that search term in YouTube, you will get these videos, okay? And I also have these videos downloaded offline. Whenever I find a video, just as a little side note, whenever I find a video that is very useful and demonstrates what's going on in the world, and I feel people would be of benefit to understand it, I don't trust it's going to be up on YouTube forever, or I don't trust it's going to be up on Vimeo forever or whatever other website. I download that to my computer. Downloading videos and understanding how to do it is so crucially important. You need to make an offline archive backup of important videos, not just expecting it to be there forever. YouTube gets censored. A lot of these tube sites, they get censored. You know, something goes up there somebody doesn't want somebody to see, and I guarantee they go right to YouTube's management, pay them whatever they want. They'll say, oh, I'll take it down and claim copyright infringement or whatever, you know. That happens constantly. You need to download stuff that is important and store it offline as if the cloud isn't going to be there tomorrow because, hey, it may not. Okay, so that, just as a side note, I wanted to say that. To go back to this. The people who handle Obama and his administration, they practice a technique that was basically a mind control technique, dark occult mind control programming, okay? And it's done through NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, speech patterns, speech techniques, and also gestures and symbols are used in this technique. And it's a prime example of what dark occultism is. Again, whenever people who have no knowledge of the occult ask me, what is the occult? How does it work? Meaning, what is the manipulatory tactics of the occult, okay, the dark occult? I always send them the videos like this to watch, and I say, just watch this and understand what they did, and you'll know what the dark occult is. That's what it really is. It's the manipulation of the human psyche. Because certain people are in high knowledge of how it works, and other people are in deep ignorance of how it works. And that creates, through that knowledge differential, that creates a tremendous power differential. So watch these videos, Obama's fainting ladies or women or campaign fainting or, you know, whatever term you find it under. You'll find it if you do that search, okay? And what they did is they took a woman to every campaign speech that Obama did during the 2008 campaign trail, and they had her pretend to faint in the audience at almost every one of his speeches. The same thing happens in the middle of the speech. He's starting to talk about or something or make a promise that he's going to deliver if he's elected president, and a woman in the crowd faints out of nowhere. Okay, so other people, you know, she swoons and faints, and other people are all gathered around her. Oh, my God, what happened? She passed out. They're making a little bit of a disturbance. And Obama snaps into action, and he immediately sees, you know, it always happens somewhere in front of his vision, okay? And he points it out immediately, and he says, do we have someone who's sick over here? Did someone feel faint? Okay, and did they pass out? Is that what I'm seeing? You know, so he... The perception is, wow, this guy is very attentive. He's paying attention. You know, he cares. There's so much care here. He stopped his speech. He didn't just continue. He stopped, and he pointed it out, and he's concerned. You see how subtle this deception is? And it's the same thing played over and over again. To put these ideas, this is how you embed an idea. It's an embedding it through a psychodrama. So the psychodrama is playing out live, and you're embedding in all these notions. He's attentive. He's knowledgeable. He's looking out for us. He sees what other people don't right away. He cares, immediately cares. He stopped his speech. This is more important than anything he was doing. Okay, you see how it works? okay? And he points it out, and he knows what to do. That's the next part. He knows what it is. How does he know she didn't just have a massive brain aneurysm and is brain dead now? That could easily have happened. How do you know her aorta, she had a weak heart and her aorta burst and had a gigantic, massive heart attack and you know, needs to be rushed for open heart surgery or something? How would he know what the – he immediately makes a diagnosis as if he knows exactly what happened, you know? So he says she just probably feels faint, and you need to make space for her. So he knows what happened, and he knows what to do. Make some space. The EMTs are on their way. Help is on the way. And now she needs some water. Now here's where the symbolism comes in. Water. It's a symbol of the spirit. It's a symbol of care. It's a symbol of the feminine. Okay? The birth, our water, the mother figure, the sacred feminine energy. Okay? The chalice. Okay? The grail figure. The water. Okay? Our spiritual waters. It's our care. So now, he hands his own water. He had a bottle at the platform, the speaking podium. And he takes his water that he was going to use if he got parched during his speech. And he gives her, he says, give her this, give her my water. See, there's that spiritual symbology embedded, placed into the psychodrama. All fake, all thought up long beforehand and repeated over and over and over and over. And luckily, people caught on to this and they made these videos that show the pattern. Where it no matter what temperature it is, no matter how many people there are, that none of that matters. It's the same woman feigning over and over and over again the same way, almost at the same time during these speeches. And he plays out the exact same thing like a well-trained actor every time. And somebody's going to tell me, they're going to tell other people, how naive would you have to believe that's not a setup? I mean, seriously, you're the greatest. I would say that's crazier. If you believe that, that is crazier than any of the wildest, wackiest, nuttiest conspiracy theories that have ever been brought up by anybody, that make absolutely no sense, that are actually like put out there to make the legitimate conspiracy uncovery movement look bad. Okay, that is way crazier to believe that that's a coincidence than the strangest, craziest conspiracies you have ever heard. Okay, you have to be the most naive human being to believe that that's just a coincidence, and it happened constantly at every place Obama visited on the campaign trail over and over again, and he played it out in the exact same way like a good actor that he is. Okay, to believe that that's coincidence. All I can say is anybody who believes that, you're a psychological infant. A psychological infant. And there's no help for you. There's no hope for you if that's what you believe after watching that video. I would feel, if somebody watched these videos and they said to me there's nothing to that, I would say, my God, I feel so sorry for you that I really hope you get psychological help very soon, because you're very, very, very sick. Very ill, mentally ill. Okay, that's all, and that's how positive I am that this is a deliberate, orchestrated effort using known occult techniques, dark occult NLP techniques. Okay, and again, this information about NLP and, you know, psychodrama and things like that's all stuff that can be used in a positive sense too. It doesn't mean it's bad. It doesn't mean these are bad things. They're being used in a bad way. They're tools. They can be used in a positive way. They can be used in a negative way. Okay, this is a dark occult way of using these tools about the knowledge of the human psyche and human motivations. So that's out there for anyone who wants to research it. But again, the context I'm bringing this up in is in relation to the New Age movement and their ignorance of the dark occult. They have no idea what occultism is really, let alone what dark occultism is. They don't know how it works. They're very unresearched in this. They're unread in it. Okay? And most of all, and this brings us to New Age deception number one, okay? They ignore it. They ignore it. That's the most important thing here. New Age deception number one is, if it's negative, ignore it. If it makes me feel uncomfortable, ignore it. If it's something that's really dark and foreboding, doesn't matter whether I really need to know about it because it directly affects me. No, no, no. If it's negative, ignore it. Now, let me tell you what this is. This is the most surefire way to ensure that the negativity and the chaotic effects of that negative behavior or situation, it's the most surefire way to ensure that those negative effects continue. To ignore the negative, you are ensuring that the negative and chaos continues. Now, the New Age wants to tell people it's the exact opposite way around. They want to tell people, oh, if you pay attention to the negative, you get more of it. And nothing could be farther from the truth. That is a blatant and complete deception and an outright lie if people know how it works and they're deliberately deceiving people by telling them that. I think that's largely not the case. It's largely a case of ignorant dupes that latch on to this idea. And just think about it from a logical perspective. If something is negative, wouldn't you want to know about its operation, especially if its operation deeply affects you? Wouldn't you want to prepare yourself with that knowledge and then put that knowledge into practice so that you steel yourself against the effects of that negative thing that's occurring? This way, you can avoid the negative effects or possibly even be able to avert them and change them or stop them. Knowledge is power. Knowledge is the empowering ability to change the outcome. Knowledge is never negative. I don't care how dark or foreboding or even outright scary and frightening the thing that you have knowledge about is. You're telling me it's not somewhat disconcerting and frightening to understand that there's people who know so much about how the human psyche operates and they're using it to deceive people outright, as in the example I just laid out to you regarding how Obama, his handlers used him and prepared that whole deception on the campaign trail to manipulate people's emotions and get people to think Obama was something that he was not. You know, that's definitely foreboding. That's definitely disconcerting. That's definitely something we should be concerned about. And that's definitely something that can be kind of frightening, knowing that these people have that much knowledge and ability about how to manipulate the human psyche and they're using it that way. Of course that's disconcerting. Of course that's somewhat frightening. But you know what? Not to understand it is to choose to remain in ignorance. And when you're remaining in ignorance and you don't know how that dynamic works, you are ensuring you're going to get more of it. And you're ensuring it's going to continue to work. It's going to continue to work on the ignorant. I'm immune to that. I know how it works. That's not going to play me. Other people are going to get played by that who don't know how it works. Just think about that just from a logical perspective. You're not going to play me with that technique. Ain't going to happen. Not going to happen. I'm streetwise to it. You know, you're not going to fool me that way, but you're going to fool a whole lot of other people. Real simple, you're going to fool them. Why? Because they're still in ignorance about how that technique works, about how that tactic, that's a psychological warfare tactic that's being waged against you. Of course, other people in ignorance of that are going to fall for it. You know? And now tell me what's more negative. Ignoring that thing and saying, oh, you shouldn't talk about that and understand how that works. Well, that's going to ensure that more people get played by it because they're not streetwise to it. But I know about it. I've taken the time to pay attention to it and understand the psychological dynamic involved. Now I know how it works. You're not going to play me that way anymore. So who's empowered and who's disempowered? The person who paid attention to the negative or the person who ignored it? I mean, just on a purely, strictly logical point of view, you have to understand that. So that's the first New Age deception. They're telling people to ignore the negative, you know? And this needs to be wholly and completely looked at as a deception for what it is and disregarded. And you need to say, no, you don't need to ignore the negative. You need to empower yourself with knowledge. That's what makes you ensure that negative thing is going to not continue anymore. It's not going to continue by you paying attention to it and knowing how it works. You're going to make sure that you stop it from doing that, from taking that knowledge, that empowering knowledge into yourself. Only ignorance is negative. Knowledge is never negative. So that's the first deception. Let me do a few more, and then if you have any calls or if you have any questions or if you want to take it in any other way, we can go from there. If you want, I'll continue for maybe we could do like half of the New Age deceptions. I'll do like three or four more. Is that all right?
Oh, please continue, brother.
Okay. And again, for all of these, you could do a couple of things to learn more about all of the New Age deceptions. We're not going to get to them all tonight. But, you know, you could go to my website, whatonearthishappening.com. You can go to the videos section, and you can watch – I have two videos up there called New Age Bullshit and the Suppression of the Sacred Masculine. One is from the Free Your Mind 2 conference, and one is an extended podcast, video podcast edition, an extended variant of that where I break down all these deceptions in detail. That's at whatonearthishappening.com in the videos section. I am also going to be giving a very extended seminar, probably an all-day seminar, on the New Age deception, in Asheville, North Carolina, on March 22nd, 2014, coming up next month, right after the spring equinox, March 22nd. That's a Saturday. It's coming up at the Lexington Avenue Brewery in Asheville, North Carolina. It's starting at 9 a.m., and you can go to my website and look at the news section for more information on this all-day seminar I'll be hosting about the New Age deception. So with that having been said, let's jump back into some of the other subtle deceptions that the New Age religion pumps out there. The second one is that anger is an emotion that should not really be experienced or, you know, displayed, that we should never get angry. And real spirituality means that you never get angry about anything that's happening. Okay, that's what the New Age movement puts forth out there and expects people to buy. Okay, now let me just look at it from this perspective here. Would the creator of the universe have even given us the ability to experience emotions that were completely unnecessary, that should be completely purged? Okay, all of the emotions are necessary, are required, are there for a reason. All of them. Everything. People will say, well, even jealousy or something like that? Sure, why not? You're a little bit jealous about how someone – now, rampant jealousy, no. Just looking at this as a very dark emotion that most people would say, oh, it's negative in all of its incarnations. I would say, no, it is not. I could look at someone who's better at something than me and say, well, I wish I could do that. Is that jealousy? Well, it's a small form of it. And then I could use that as a motivating factor to improve what I'm doing. So that's what jealousy is there for, what desiring what somebody else has is there for. It doesn't mean I want this person's car so much I'm going to go steal it from them. No, of course that would be a negative manifestation of that emotion, okay? But they're all the emotions, no matter what they are, they have a positive side to them. Anger, if it's completely unchanneled and misdirected, is of course a negative emotion. That's common sense. Look, the bully whose parents are beating him, right? He's being abused at home by his father. His father's an alcoholic. When he gets home from work, he beats this boy who's in, let's say he's a freshman, or let's say he's an eighth grader, okay? He beats him. He takes a beating from his alcoholic dad once a day or maybe every other day at home, okay? So this kid's enraged. He's living in an abusive situation. There's all this anger in him. He has no real outlet for it because the mother's in denial. She's afraid of getting beat by the father. Let's just look at this hypothetical scenario. So he goes to school, and he takes out his anger on his classmates. He becomes the class bully. This is what people in an abuse victim cycle often do. They perpetuate the cycle. It's a classical psychological victim complex, and then the victim becomes the abuser because he starts to identify with the abuser because he would rather be in the position of doling out the abuse than the one taking the abuse. So then he becomes the abuser in this psychological situation, and then he picks out a new victim. In this case, it's the, you know, somewhat, you know, maybe somewhat nerdy-looking kid in his class. Excuse me, I thought I was going to sneeze there for a moment. I apologize. he abuses, let's say, the younger, you know, maybe he's in fifth grade or fourth grade. And on the playground at recess, he takes the kid's lunch money and, you know, is using all that anger, channeling all that anger, and is being abusive to someone else as a result. Of course that's a negative manifestation of anger. Of course that's not how you should use anger. Of course that is not positive and not productive. It's unchanneled, okay? It doesn't go anywhere. All it does is create more suffering. We're not debating that, okay? That's common sense. What the New Age movement wants to tell people about don't get angry is that there's no positive use for anger. And oh, it should be purged. And you should be a person that never gets real passionate and upset even and outright angry about what's going on in, due to the injustices that are taking place in our world. No, don't ever display that. You know, and how many New Agers even talk about the injustices that go on in our world? They want to talk with the NPR voice, the nothing can make me angry. I am in total control of my emotions at all times and places, and I have no passion. I am a passionless robot that talks like this in an even tone at all times and places, no matter what's going on, even if I'm being hoarded into a cattle car and taken to my own extermination camp. You know, this is ridiculous. This isn't real. It's inauthentic. Okay? This idea that you should be a person that speaks in a monotone voice and never displays any passion or emotion is the sign of an inauthentic being, an inauthentic life being lived. That's what it really is. Okay? Now, I'm not going to go off in a total rage all the time and be screaming at people. I raise my voice when I feel I have to. I can explain things in a very calm voice, too. You're going to hear the emotion in my voice, too, because I'm a real person. I get angry at what's wrong with this world because I'm going to use all of my will, all of my energy, all of my thoughts, all of my emotions, and all of my actions to change it. I'm not going to accept it. I'm going to change it. Okay, and that's another thing we'll get to, you know, accepting everything and never really trying to change everything. Just accept it all. That's another deception. We'll get to that. Okay, so, you know, this idea of never get angry, it's taking a needed human emotion that can really help us to be motivate our behavior to change things for the better if we get angry about what's wrong. The New Age movement wants to stamp that out. Why? Because it wants to stifle action. And if getting angry about injustice is a way to motivate people to action, well, we have to stamp out that emotion. That emotion is no good because ultimately the end goal here is make the slavery continue by making people not take action against that slavery. So therefore, they got to be feeling good all the time in their cage. You know, you got to have that positive vibe and that, you know, super emotional high at all times in your state of slavery, don't you know? You know? Feel good about your slavery, you know? Don't question it. Don't challenge it. Most of all, don't get angry about it and try to change it. No, we don't want that, okay? So this is the deception, never get angry. Now, let's look at the one I just talked about, okay? Accept everything and never resist. Just accept, okay? Now, one of the things that puts this forward, you see things like the Course in Miracles putting this notion forward. Everything should be accepted as it is. Even Eckhart Tolle puts this forward too. I like some of the material he puts out, and then other things I think he, you know, kind of goes off the path on. You know, it's about accepting what is in the sense of, is it real? You know, natural law is what is, and it's real. It exists in nature. It would be in your best interest to accept that it exists, that you are bound by it, and that's just the way things are. But that doesn't mean because the conditions of mind control and slavery are in place, that's not real. That's an artificially imposed condition that ultimately keeps us back, holds us down in consciousness, and prevents us from where we want to go in the spiritual journey. Well, that shouldn't be accepted then. That can be changed, and it should be changed. See, I think the very best example of the streetwise distinguishing between what should be accepted and what should be resisted and changed is the real prayer of serenity. And I don't mean the way that it came down to us in the 12-step program version. You know, there's a way that this gets put out there to people, this prayer of serenity. Many people will have heard it as, God, grant me the strength to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things which I can change, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, this is a watered down variant of this very important prayer of encouragement and prayer of discernment, more than even a prayer of serenity. I would call this a prayer of discernment, and I'll explain what I mean by that in a moment. This relates directly to the New Age concept of accept everything and never resist, okay? There are things we should accept, and then there are things we should resist, okay? And the prayer of serenity in the original by Reinhold Niebuhr, he said, God, grant me the grace to accept with serenity the things. Now listen to the difference between the 12-step version and Niebuhr's original. To accept with serenity the things that cannot be changed. Is that a big difference? Is that even much bigger than even just a minor subtle difference from that which I cannot change? Well, that which I personally in my own life cannot change, okay, is a big difference between the things universally that cannot be changed, okay? That doesn't mean I have no power necessarily to affect what this person is doing right now in the moment. Okay, they're making their decisions based on what they know right now. I can start in the moment talking to them to try to change their mind and influence their mind and give them understanding, help them to understand something that they didn't, and that may eventually influence them to change their behavior. But ultimately, that person's in charge of their own behavior, and through their free will, they're choosing what behaviors they want to enact and which behaviors they don't want to enact. I'm not in control of those things. I have to accept that I'm not in control. I'm not in control of Curtis Davis's behavior, ladies and gentlemen. You know who's in control of Curtis Davis's behavior? Curtis Davis. No one else. Okay? He's in control of his behavior, and he's responsible for it. You know whose behavior I'm in control of? Mark Passio's behavior. Okay? So I cannot change someone else's behavior just by the force of my own will. I can help to influence it by talking to them, by explaining things to them, by showing them information, and maybe at some future point they will make the free will decision to change that behavior. In the moment, I have to accept I'm not in control of that other person's behavior. That's something I cannot change right now. Okay? That means in my own personal sphere of influence. What Niebuhr, I believe, is really talking about here in the first part of this prayer is to allow me to have the grace to accept with serenity that which definitely, definitively cannot be changed. These are the laws of nature that we are all bound by. We cannot change the laws of nature. We cannot change the manifested truth of the present moment. It is that which already has occurred. It's that which is. All you can do is accept the truth and know about it. That's it. In the past, you're not going to change the truth. You can start going to work in the present moment to change future truth that will manifest in the future, but that doesn't mean that in this moment you can change what has occurred. That's something that cannot be changed. That's the truth, okay? Natural law cannot be changed. It operates the way it operates, and that's it, okay? And you can only accept it with serenity, or you can remain ignorant of it. Now, the second part of the prayer, give me the grace to accept with serenity the things that cannot be changed, the courage to change the things which should be changed. Listen to how strong that language is. The things which should be changed, which means you know in your discernment, in your knowledge and understanding, that these things are wrong. And they should not be the way they currently are, and they should be changed, and that means you have a moral obligation to attempt to change them. That means the current human condition should not be the way it is. Who is to say that? I'll say that. The current condition should not be the way that it is. Absolutely. And that's not denying reality. That means the current condition is the way that it is, but should it be that way? No. It should not be that way. So am I going to just accept it and say, oh, that's just the way things are? I can't do anything to change that. I absolutely can do something to change that. And you know what? I am doing something to change that. And you know what? Very slowly, it's changing, and it's going to change more. And eventually that's going to reach a crescendo that's going to be like a tidal wave that is not going to be able to be stopped or slowed. Okay? So, and I'm going to have an impact on that. I'm not powerless to have an impact on that great change. Neither is anyone else if they have the will to do it, to do that great work. You are not powerless to make that change happen. Okay? So Niebuhr here is saying, grant me the courage to change the things which should be changed, which are unacceptable, the things I cannot accept, that I will not accept. And here's the important part. Now, this is the real important part here, the third part of this prayer. And grant me the wisdom to distinguish the one from the other, meaning I need to know what is that which cannot be changed versus I need to know that which can and should be changed. That's discernment. That is spiritual discernment right there in a nutshell. Very, very powerful. If you really understand it, if you really sit and read that over and over again and really deeply understand it, it's like a light bomb goes off inside the mind when you realize how powerful what's being said is there. You need to accept with serenity the things that cannot be changed, natural law. The courage to change the things which should be changed. First of all, myself, my own free will, to come into greater alignment with natural law, and then to influence other people to also understand and then make that change within themselves. And then the wisdom to distinguish that which cannot be changed from that which should and must be changed in our world. Okay? That's what real wisdom is. That's what real enlightenment is all about. You know the laws of nature, you know the human condition, and you know that your work is to help to align the human condition with the laws of nature. That's what the great work is, you know, and you know what can be changed and what cannot be changed. That's discernment, and I'm sad to say, and again, it's not just to blatantly offend people. It's out there to just put the truth out there. Most of the New Age movement does not have that discernment. They're not even close to that level of discernment, I hate to say, okay? But I'm going to say it anyway because it's true. People are not at that level of discernment. They're at this notion, this ridiculous, non-spiritually enlightened notion, that what real spirituality is about accepting everything, no matter how unjust or evil it is. And this is nonsense. This is pure, unadulterated nonsense and BS, okay? There are things that should and must be changed, you know, and then there are things we can't change, okay? We have to know the difference between them, and we need to go to work changing the things which should and must be changed. That's what discernment is all about, and this notion of accept everything is what's holding the New Age community back from a proper understanding of that dynamic. Why don't I leave it right there, Curtis? I've explained those three, which is about a third of the 10 deceptions I cover in the lecture, and I'll open up the floor for your questions, and then maybe we could take some calls from the audience for the duration.
Oh, yeah. You know, one of the things that you pointed out and that has really resonated with me, Mark, you know, with regard to the New Age spirituality community. Now, you know, you and I both agree that that too falls under the umbrella of organized distorted doctrine.
Yes.
Okay. It's just in another form to catch those people who, as you previously stated, don't really want to be Christians or otherwise.
Correct.
So now this has become a safe haven for them. Them not realizing that. Well, yeah, you know, you jumped out of the frying pan and into the fire.
That's right.
You know, but what really stood out to me is when you emphasize that it suppresses the masculine principle, you know,
that's right.
the shadow, if you will. And just like the more known, you know, forms of organized distorted doctrine, you know, it does the same thing. It serves to make you passive. Therefore,
right.
It makes you easier to influence and conquer.
And control, exactly. And that's what this is all about, keeping people enslaved and under control. Not actually granting real freedom, you know, not actually granting the insight that would open up the door to true freedom, but putting you in another cage. That's why I believe it's the researcher named Cameron Day who coined the term the New Cage Movement. I love it. I love that term.
I love that.
Instead of even the New Age movement, this is the New Cage movement. You know, it's the cage of organized religious doctrine didn't work, so here's a new cage for you to go into. You're not going to go to real freedom. We'll just put you in a slightly larger cage, and, you know, you might not be able to see, you know, where the bars go from this one, you know, but they're over there. The bars are over there. It's a new cage, a little bit more of a free-range cage, but you're still in a cage, you know. This is the new cage. Yep.
You know, when people fear, you know, learning natural law, you know, it lets me know that people truly fear freedom. You know, that if you take the chains off and you open the cage and say, well, go, you're free. You know, I'm free. What? Nah, I'm not used to being free. You know, put me back in the cage, you know, where I'm more secure. Where I'm, it's familiar to me.
Right.
You know, because as long as I stay with what's familiar, then I don't have to think.
That's right.
You know,
most of all, you don't have to act.
Exactly.
See, the New Age movement doesn't call for action. It calls for changing yourself internally, but then really not doing much after that. You know, we need people who are motivated to action. The sacred masculine component needs to be present. And only action is going to change things in the manifested reality. Thoughts are going to start that process. Emotions are going to help drive that process. But what's ultimately going to manifest that process is taking real-world action in the 3D world, here and now. And that cannot be underestimated and just treated as, oh, that's secondary or non-important or that's ancillary to spirit. Of course, spirit is the fundamental underlying intelligence that drives everything in the whole cosmos. I'm not denying that. I'm saying that to say that matter is just secondary to spirit and it doesn't matter what happens here in the physical world, the physical domain, is nonsense. Of course what happens here matters, and we should be concerned about what goes down here, okay? Because this is the realm for physical manifested experience that the spirit is having its experience within. You know, no learning or growth would be able to take place if we didn't have a physical construct for the spirit to have an experience within. That doesn't mean that nothing that happens here matters. Everything that happens here matters. You know, that's what this is for. This whole construct of the physical domain is for the learning and growth of the spirit. And you can't just say, well, because I see spirit as the unified source of everything, that matter is just all an illusion, and just throw it out there and nothing that matters happens here. Isn't that what ancient religionists tried to do? You know, and religion that came in as a control system, taking people off the spiritual path, the same thing they tried to do. Oh, nothing matters here. Only what happens in the afterlife matters. You know, the spiritual world is all that matters. Everything here is it's the devil's domain. This is all just it's a construct. And if you get attached to anything that happens here, you're just attached to, you know, the devil's creation. You know, this is utter bunk. It's utter nonsense. What it is an excuse. It's a cowardly excuse not to influence or make anything change here by an act of our own will. It means standing down, taking no action, and letting evil run amok and own this whole place. And that's where we've really come as a species. Most people are in that inactive religious mindset, whether it's because they believe in whatever religion that they believe in, including the New Age movement, and they're tied to this notion of what happens here doesn't matter, or even whether they become lazy, they become disinterested. It's all forms of right brain imbalance. All forms of the population at large is in right-brained imbalance, okay?
Yes.
The controllers and the whole control system and the government are in left-brain imbalance. So you have a psychopathic left-brain imbalance, quote, elite. They're not the elite of everything except the bottom of a garbage can, okay? But, you know, they look at themselves as our masters or rulers. They're totally out of balance to the right brain, and it's in their best interest to keep the bulk of the population rooted in right-brain imbalance, which is overly religious thinking and dogmatic thinking and thinking that nothing that happens here matters and all we have to do is aspire to some spiritual realm or spiritual domain. And again, there's no balance in that approach. There is no difference or difference in significance between the spiritual and the material, the spiritual and the physical. They are one and the same. The realm of matter, the material world, is a construct for the spirit, and the spirit supports that realm of experience. So, of course, they're both equal, and they're both just as important as the other, and neither one should be put up on a pedestal.
That is so true. You know, and it's, you know, it's really ironic. You know, I was having a conversation with someone else about the same thing a couple of days ago. And I said, well, you know, as a matter of fact, we were discussing your work, Mark, you know, natural law. And we were both saying that, well, when we look out at the world, you know, it's obvious who is operating more with natural law than the other, because, you know, I'm like you. You know, when I hate to use the word elite, you know, so like you, I use the word controllers.
Right.
But obviously, they have a totally different belief system than the masses. And you know, if what they believe, if the philosophies that they hold have enabled them to put them where they are and to keep the masses where they are, then you have to look at that, because the controllers, you know, the masses obviously have the numbers.
Right.
But, you know, the quote-unquote controllers, they don't have as many numbers, but yet they influence so much. So we have to look at the belief system of both parties. And obviously the belief system that the controllers have has been quite effective.
Sure. See, the biggest dynamic is the ignorance of the masses to natural law. That's what's holding the dynamic in place the way that it is. And for people to think that the controllers of the slavery system don't understand natural law is a big mistake too. Okay? Don't think they don't understand how natural law works. They do. They're interested in keeping it in that dynamic of slavery through keeping immorality the way of the world. Okay, but what they're doing is so incredibly, I don't even want to use the word ingenious, it's evil genius, okay? What they're doing is they're insulating themselves from the repercussions of moral spiritual law by getting other people to perform their actions for them. You could just look at this in the sense of the military, okay? The military perform the actions that the financial elites want them to perform, okay? You know, supranational corporations want certain resources in certain countries, and they send troops in through the government. They control the government. They send troops in, and they perform that behavior. They perform that act of theft. They perform those acts of violence, okay? The people who are desiring those resources, that there's what the military industrial complex is being used to extract from those nations, they're not doing those behaviors. You think, let's say, you know, head of the Rockefeller family who controls oil in the United States, or the head of a Saudi Arabian, you know, oil dynasty, you think they're strapping on a semi-automatic weapon or an automatic weapon and going out to actually do physical violence to somebody whose resources they want to take? They're telling other people to do that for them. They're the ones who are recruiting these people, grooming them up, brainwashing them, putting them out there into the world to go and do whatever bidding they want them to do. And the other people say, I don't need to think, I just need to behave. Yes, sir. And they go out. Now, who's going to take the moral brunt of the consequences when it comes to natural law? You think it's going to be the person who issued the command or the order? No. It's going to be the person who performed the action, because through the action, they brought it into actualization or manifestation. The person who creates the condition through the action is the one who's actually going to bear the brunt of the moral culpability, always. If I tell somebody, here's a firearm, shoot this person, for no particular reason, just because I don't want them here. I want them hurt. I want them dead. Shoot them. No, I don't want to shoot them. Well, I'll give you $10,000 to do it. I'll give you $20,000 to do it. Okay. And then they shoot them. Well, who's ultimately responsible? Me? I may have had that desire, but did I do the action? No matter what anybody says, I may have influenced the action, but that doesn't mean I performed the action. And this is something many people will have a very, very hard time with, and they'll have an emotional reaction to what I'm saying. Okay? The person who performs the action, and I don't care what it is, if it is a harmful action, the person who performs it through their behavior, their action, the thing that brought it into being, that's why it's called a behavior, okay? Be, have, okay? And then they have done it, okay? They took it into themselves, and they enacted it, okay? So it's theirs. They embodied it. They be that thing. And then they have that thing. They took that behavior into themselves. They took that action into themselves and took it in the world, physically did it. That means they're responsible for what occurred ultimately. Ultimately, I'm not saying that there's no moral culpability on the part of the person who influenced it through their desire and their words. But you know what? You look at a president who signs an executive order, or you know, a Congress who signs and says that this military action is fine to go do and funds it. They're not doing the action. The soldiers are doing the action. So this is what the quote-unquote elite, the powers that shouldn't be, they understand how natural law works. They're insulating themselves. They're not the people who are in this realm or any other realm are going to bear the brunt of the moral culpability. You know who's going to bear the brunt of moral culpability for hurting innocent children in a foreign country in a war? The soldiers who perform the action are, okay? You know, whether that happens in this domain or in some other spiritual domain, they're the people who are going to have to work out that karmic consequence. I'm not saying that the person who orders it isn't, but I'm saying it's going to be much less, and that's what they're trying to do. They're turning natural law on its head by brainwashing, through their understanding of the human psyche, other people to perform the actions that they want done for them. And therefore, they're taking the brunt of the culpability off of themselves, and they're putting it squarely on the shoulders of the people who are performing that action. That's called moral culpability. And the moral culpability always lies with the person who took the action, with the order follower, in other words, who actually performed the action, more so than it does with the order giver. And of course, I'm not saying the order giver bears no moral culpability, because they do, but they bear much less than the one who bears more or most of it, which is the order follower, the action taker. Many people will have a real hard time with that. If we have any calls from the audience, I'd love to hear from people, whatever questions they have. They want to, you know, type them in or call in. If we have any, Curtis, if we could take the last half an hour and do that, I would like that.
All right. Well, we have one question from the chat room, and it reads, what is the difference between natural law and universal law, if there is any?
No, I would say, in the way I use the term natural law, no, there is no difference. Again, natural law is karmic law. It is moral law. It's been called karmic law in the Indus Valley traditions of consciousness. It has been called a moral law in the esoteric Christian traditions. In the New Age community, it's been called universal law or universal spiritual law. In the traditions of consciousness, which I look at, the name I like to call it myself is just universal spiritual law, you could call it cosmic, universal, moral, spiritual law to distinguish it from any other system that we're talking about. We are not talking about moral law as described by philosophical writers such as John Locke or other writers who attempted to encode man's law with some of these notions of moral law. Please do not confuse it with that version of natural law, because a lot of these writers use the term natural law, and that is not what I am talking about. I am talking about universal laws that are put there by the creator of the universe that govern the behavior that we enact through our free will decisions. And I'm not talking about anything else when I say the term natural law. I hope that clarifies it.
Excellent. I know we're going to take our first caller.
Sure.
We have a caller from the 305 area code. Caller, if you're there, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys. My name is Louis, calling out of Miami. Good talking to you, Curtis and Mark. A pleasure talking to both of you.
Likewise.
Just wanted to ask you a question, guys. What is your suggestions for any steps to take to clear you? I mean, walk in the natural law and avoid the civil law that's upon our heads. Is there actions that I got to take before? Or do I got to wait to have an encounter with the forces out there, you know, to stand my ground as a man, or other actions to be taken? Especially also, I'm concerned about my daughter, which, you know, in the birthing of my daughter, the deception on the whole, you know, process that I went through, that apparently I turn over, you know, my daughter over to these people. Is there a way to reclaiming my daughter back before she turns of age, especially in her case being autistic?
Well, I would say, to answer the first part of your question, how we walk in natural law or exist in harmony with it is by deeply examining our own actions. So, in other words, you have to ask yourself, what am I doing on a daily basis? What am I participating in? What am I contributing to? And if any of those answers come back and you see that there is a form of harm being conducted against someone else, or something that is taking something from someone else that you don't have the right to take, then you need to pull back your own behavior from those actions. You need to pull back your own involvement, I should say, from those actions. So let me give you an example. Let's look at a police officer, okay? He is charged with code enforcement, not really upholding natural law. Okay, he's charged with upholding code enforcement of man's law, so rules and regulations. So in other words, in the city of Philadelphia, to own, possess, and smoke the herb marijuana or cannabis, okay, is illegal. It's against code, all right? Civil code. Now, the job, the state... job description, law enforcers, they're code enforcers, right, is to take action against anyone who's breaking the code of the codes that man has put into place and said, according to my whim, I don't want anybody doing this. Now, that can be completely outside the boundaries and the scope of natural law. And yet, if he continues to do that job, his behavior is going to have to be in direct opposition with natural law. Because if he goes and even, let's say he has many options. He could throw somebody in a cage. Now, you just took freedom, somebody's freedom, physical freedom that didn't belong to you for possessing a plant when they were harming no one. He could take the physical property from them. He's going to, many people, if they get encountered with having, you know, cannabis, especially in any kind of larger amount in their possession, they take it from them. Okay, so now you're taking property. It's all forms of theft. Stealing freedom, stealing property, stealing rights. That person has a right to put into their body what they want to put into their body as an adult. So therefore, you're stealing that, and that's a coercive action. You're saying, no, you will not put this into your body. Well, that's my free will decision because I own my body. You claiming that it's not my decision to put what I want into my own body is a claim of ownership on my body. So just that way, You understand, every single solitary cop who has ever lived on the face of the earth has been in opposition to natural law just by the fact of their doing that job. You cannot do that job and be walking within natural law, existing within, in harmony with natural law. It is a complete contradiction and impossibility. There has never been a cop who has been in harmony with natural law. There can never be. It is an impossibility according to the very definition of what that job is. So, therefore, what I would say is the only way to rectify that discrepancy and that opposition is not to do that job anymore. You cannot do that job if you want to be in harmony with natural law. A banker who's participating in the enslavement system financially and is participating in the fractional fiat currency, fractional reserve fiat currency scam that is being perpetuated by the central banks of this country cannot be doing that job and actually be in harmony with natural law. It's not possible. Cannot be. So therefore, the goal is you have to step back from that and get out of that position. This is why the term "get out" is so important.
I'm not actually in that position. I'm in the other side of that position, and I'm trying to free myself from the nightmare of the daily, right. Being harassed by people who thinks they have the power to harass me over bullshit,
right.
You know.
And Lewis, the answer here to that question is, unfortunately, until we can convert more minds to the understanding of natural law, people are still going to enact those immoral behaviors that they have no right to enact, and enough people aren't going to resist those behaviors physically. See, the founding fathers.
That's where I want to be advised. How do I get the more knowledge? Because from what I hear in your videos, and you are great, and some of the other people that I've been listening to for the past year or two, have great things to say. But then you know, I'm trying to pick what's the way out of it? Is there a legal thing that one should do in the two dimension and the three dimension or?
It is to ignore the laws of man. The laws of man are arbitrary dictates set by a ruling class. There is no procedure to declare one's sovereignty and say, I am not subject. I am not your subject. I'm not your slave. It is to declare that and then try to live that way as much as possible. So would that mean physically resisting somebody who did something against your right to do? I'm not telling you to do that. I'm saying, would it be your right to do that? It would be. But the problem lies in, what are the consequences in the physical world for taking an action like that? Because most people don't understand that would be your right. So let me give you an example, okay? I'll give you a hardcore example, all right? Let's say I wanted to freely smoke a marijuana cigarette, a cannabis cigarette, okay?
And someone
came up to me and said, I'm going to arrest you or I'm going to take that from you. And I said, try to stop me from putting something into my own body or take my property, and I'm going to physically defend myself. And then they tried to take that action, and I said, if you don't desist from doing this, I'm going to consider that you are physically harming me, and I don't know where that's going to go or escalate to, so I'm going to physically defend myself with a weapon if you don't stop, and I'm giving you one chance to stop. And they kept coming, and I put them down with a weapon. Would I have acted within natural law? I would tell you I absolutely would have acted within natural law, 100% absolutely, okay? Because you've given the person a chance to stop with coercion and with physical harm to your body and property, and they've refused that chance to stop. Now, let me say this. I'm not telling anybody to go and do that, because if you did, most people don't understand that that would have been acting in harmony with natural law, and they would probably come and do physical harm to you or throw you in a cage, and most people would do not lift a finger to help you, even though you've acted within natural law. So the problem here lies in the mind, Lewis. It doesn't lie in any physical behavior. It lies in you need to get involved in helping people to come out of the mind control that they're under until so many people come out of it that no one, No one would come up to someone else and say, I'm going to coerce you to stop putting something into your body that you have every right to put into your body, because your body belongs to you, and I understand that it belongs to you just as I understand that my body belongs to me. That's the problem. The problem is the mind control that the 99% of the body of this absolute mud species called humanity is still under. These are golems. We are a golemized race of beings that has absolutely no understanding of truth. No understanding of truth. And until we decide we're going to get actively involved, the tiny, tiny, tiny percent of people that do understand truth and do understand morality and do understand natural law are going to get involved in every waking moment of our natural lives till the day we die, work on those other people to change their minds. Until you make that commitment, nothing can be done. That's the commitment that needs to be made. You need to speak this to every living human being that you encounter unapologetically, all day long, constantly, and do nothing else. Now, that's extremism. I'm telling you, that's extremity to the nth degree as far as you can take it, and I'm telling you, nothing less is ever going to get it done. That's what
I agree with you, man, because everyone I speak to in the matter looks at me like a deer with the headlights on them. You know, they're like, oh, what?
They
what?
Haven't heard enough in great enough numbers. That's right. You're right. Until the chorus of voices that are preaching this message become so loud and impossible to ignore that it's being heard from all angles at all times, every day, all times and places, don't expect for one minute anything in this world to change. That's what the great work is. And that is from a totally non-naive, realistic approach, understanding the real dynamic that's going on in this world, what it's going to take. And it's not going to take one iota, one drop of energy less than what I've just explained and laid out there to you. That's called the human will, with a capital W. And until people develop that will, expect slavery. That's the answer to your question.
Yes,
and I thank
indeed.
You for it.
You got it.
Thank you so much for calling in, my friend. Take care.
No, I thank you guys.
And we are going to move on to our next caller. We have a caller from the 516 area code. Caller, if you're there, please state your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Jay. I'm calling from New York.
How you doing?
Me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, my question was, like, what if you partake in a sport like football or like boxing? Is that acting
right
in accordance with natural law?
Absolutely. And let's see if I can get you to explain to me why it is. I won't explain it. I'll try to get you to arrive at the answer. Okay? Well, so what is a sport? Describe to me what you do when you play a sport.
You compete.
Okay. Now, is someone coercing you to do that behavior, or are you choosing that behavior?
You choose.
What about people on the other side? Are they making a choice to compete in that sport?
Yeah,
or
they make the same choice.
They're making a choice, right? So two boxers. So I explain this to people this way. Are two boxers engaging in a competition, engaging in violence? Is that violent behavior? By definition, violence has to involve the violation of someone else's natural rights. So see, we have a colloquial definition for violence. We have a connotative definition. It's not a real definition. Violence means you're using coercive action, you're initiating coercive action, and in doing so, you are stealing the rights of another living being or their property. That's what violence is. You're engaged in some form of theft against a person's rights or their property through initiated coercive behavior. Is a boxer doing that with the other boxer? Or have they both made a free will decision to participate in a competition of strength and force?
Exactly.
So therefore, it's not a violent behavior. People want to call it violent, but this is where the mind control blurring or the obfuscation of the definitions of words comes in as a mind control technique. Boxers have never done anything violent to another boxer. Okay, as long as they're participating in a sport willingly, both parties are, then that's a consensual agreement to participate in a competition that involves force. That has nothing to do with violent behavior. Neither one of those, when they are boxing, are violating the other person's natural inherent rights. They are simply competing with each other in agreement with each other to compete. So that has nothing to do with the violation of someone's rights, and henceforth, it is not violence.
Thank you. Mm. Appreciate it.
Yep, you got it. Anything else?
No, that's it. That's all.
Cool. I'm glad I was able to answer that for you.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Powell, thank you so much for calling in, caller. Excellent, excellent questions. And as we wind down, Mark, once again, you know, it was a powerful, powerful presentation. But please, just do a recap.
Sure.
With, you know, what you have coming up and what's going on now and anything,
sure.
Any other information you wish to share with us.
Well, Curtis, let me first of all thank you for bringing me back onto your show. And again, we spoke a little bit off air before. Things have been a little bit tense and hectic for me. I've been involved in a lot of different projects kind of at the same time. And, of course, in life, not everything goes the way you expect or want it to go. So I was kind of a little tense and on edge even beforehand, before the show. But I said to you before we started, I was just going to come on here and just let loose and let fly and let the truth, you know, speak through me and, you know, put some good information out there for people tonight. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to do that by inviting me onto your show today. And again, it's always a pleasure to be here. For people who want to become more familiar with my work, you can go to www.whatonearthishappening.com, okay? And I highly recommend when you go to that site, you can watch the videos there. The videos are of many different varied topics. And one thing I want to say before I continue with this is that when a lot of people say that they're familiar with my work, I often find that they've watched many of the videos that are out there on YouTube, which are often podcasts or other presentations that I've given. But I'm not telling people not to do that. I think it's great that people have put many of my podcasts out on YouTube and they put the slides to them. That's wonderful, and I appreciate the work, and I'm not telling people not to do that. But if you're only familiar with my work through YouTube, you're getting it out of order, and it's kind of maybe disjointed. It's not forming the tapestry that it is meant to form as I have intended to put it out there. And again, I tell people, you're free to post this material anywhere you want. So different people will encounter different aspects of it by watching it that way. The best way to become familiar with what I'm really talking about here is to go to my website and to go through the podcasts. Go to the podcast page, the audio podcast, and go through it in order. And then you can click into the slides. So each podcast, it has related images with it. You click those, it brings up a little slideshow. And as you listen, you can go through the slides. And it's like getting each podcast is like a little mini presentation. Okay? So I highly recommend going through my podcasts in chronological order. So start at number one. You have to go to the third page because they're in reverse chronological order. The later ones are actually at the top of the list. So go all the way back to the first one and go through it in order from number one forward. And do this. Don't feel any pressure about doing this. Just the best way of approaching this is to go through it at your own pace, at your own leisure, when you have time to do it, when you're relaxed, when you can take in the information, and, you know, just move through it at your own pace. But don't skip around. I tell people, you know, don't go and listen to podcast number 130 before you've listened to podcast 1 through 129, okay? Really sit and start at the beginning. And it doesn't matter how long it takes because it's meant to be an unfoldment, okay? It's meant to be a chronological progression of ideas. And the knowledge that you'll gain in podcast, let's say, you know, 110 or something like that, is built upon the prerequisite knowledge that I give out in the earlier podcast. So skipping around is actually going to make things more confusing in my estimation. Okay, so I recommend people start at the beginning and move forward in order at your own pace. The most powerful material that is condensed in one spot anywhere on my website, that I would tell people that if you have no time to go through all of the podcasts, if you wanted to just get the best condensation of my material in one place, it is without any doubt the Natural Law Seminar. It is the that's why I put it at the top of my videos section. It is the top three videos in my videos section at whatonearthishappening.com. If you have no time for any of the other material, this is the heart and soul of the material that I talk about. It is what people need to understand more than anything else about what is going on in this world and what is true. And if you have no time to listen to any of the other material, that's the core material that really needs to be understood in those three videos. So that's my recommendation. And I have, several projects on the horizon. I'm going to be taking part in a Human Origins conference that's going to be hosted in several cities throughout the world, as a matter of fact. That's going to be coming up probably around the summer months. I'll probably be speaking in New York City as part of that. I don't have the exact details on it yet, but that'll be forthcoming. I'm going to, again, be in Asheville, North Carolina. This is going to be a great all-day seminar. It's going to be on the New Age deceptions. I'm going to cover 15 New Age deceptions in this seminar. Five in addition to the 10 ones that I did in my presentation at the Free Your Mind Conference and in the extended video podcast on New Age Bullshit. So this one is called New Age Bullshit and the Suppression of the Sacred Masculine Revisited, with even more New Age deceptions exposed. That's the name of the seminar, and I'm going to cover 15 New Age deceptions, 10 plus 5 new ones that I've been working up over the last couple months. And that's going to be Saturday, March 22nd, 2014 at the Lexington Avenue Brewery. It's at 39 North Lexington Avenue in Asheville, North Carolina. The doors will open at 8 o'clock a.m. I'm sorry, at 9 o'clock a.m. Advance tickets are only $7 for an all-day seminar. You cannot beat that anywhere. I don't care. Let me tell you something. I don't care where you go. You're not going to find a seminar with this deep and this much information exposed about something that is so important as the deception of the New Age movement for $7, okay? And you can call 828-782-0840 if you're in the Asheville area, or if you plan to be and you want to attend, or you could email I walk with purpose, all one word, at gmail.com to request advanced tickets. At the door tickets, walk-in tickets are only $10 donation at the door. So only $3 more. That you can't beat anywhere, even if you go with the walk-in price. So, Asheville, North Carolina, March 22nd, we're gonna turn the dark energy of the order of death all around and bring the light out on March 22nd. For people who understand the occult, they know what I'm talking about right there. You know, March 22nd, a very big day in the dark aspect of the occult. Well, we're going to shine the light on the world on March 22nd of this year, and we'll be doing that in Asheville, North Carolina. So that's my next big project coming up. And again, just check out my website, whatonearthishappening.com. So much information there. It's a lifetime of knowledge and so much research that you could research the topics, and you could research the other books and other offers for lifetimes if you want. Tons of info up there. I highly recommend it. And keep putting the word out there like you're doing, Curtis, because action is what it is all about. And you're doing a phenomenal job with your show. And I just want to commend you for that and say keep it up.
Thank you so much, brother. I mean, that means a lot coming from you. And I mean, because, I love you and the family loves you. And thanks, man, for taking time out of your busy schedule. Because as you can see, family, he is busy and getting busier by the day. So I'm already looking forward to the next time you come by, Mark. Every time you come by, you always come by with something new, something powerful, and something enlightening.
Absolutely.
So
anytime, Curtis, I'm at your disposal, and there's so many more topics that we could discuss. One of the main things I'm going to be getting into in future work is the dynamic of psychological abandonment from a parental perspective, parental abandonment, and how this really adversely impacts the human psyche and opens up, you know, these cravings and these desires to have someone else act as a parental figure in our life. It's something I'm going to be going into so much deeper in my future work. And just as a brief aside, people don't think I'm not doing any podcasts or radio anymore. I have taken a hiatus from that because of other projects I've been working on. But What on Earth is Happening as a radio show may be coming back very soon. I'm also working with a project to try to make that happen. I don't want to say any more about that because, you know, I'm in talks, or I'm going to be in talks regarding that. But at some point in the future, the What on Earth is Happening radio show will also be coming back. So keep an eye out for that as well in the future.
Oh, we can't wait. You know, I mean, definitely hurry up with that, because I followed your old podcast, and all I can say is, wow. You know, so to hear that that podcast is coming back, well, there it is. You know, so please, definitely bring that podcast back, because it is needed. Thank you so much, brother. And yeah, I'm going to be talking to you real soon, because
absolutely,
as you said, there's some things in the works that I'm very excited about.
Curtis, thank you so much for inviting me on, and thanks to the listening audience for listening. And again, keep up the great work.
You too as well, brother. Be well. Wasn't that great, family? Mark always is. I mean, every time he comes on Occult Science Radio, he always has special, special information for us. That is just so refreshing and so enlightening. Also, don't forget to visit theoccultnetwork.com. Visit the Occult Network page on Facebook. Also visit the Occult Network on YouTube and Twitter. And don't forget to come find me on Facebook as well, Curtis Illuminated One Davis. So tune in to on Wednesday night at 8 p.m. when we will have back with us Siddiqui Bakari. And you know, when Siddiqui Bakari comes, it is going to be a powerful evening. So with that, my precious family, as I always say in closing, peace, love, and power. And please, please walk with strength. Peace.
I'm getting close.